Dave Fanning on 2FM.
All right, it's exactly 9 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock on this Sunday morning, and it's every Saturday and Sunday. We're with you from 9 to 11. 51552 is the text. Now, a new Coldplay film has just been released. It's called Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams. There's lots of great early footage and up-close and personal stuff. All in all, it's a very intimate portrait of Coldplay as it charts the rise of the band from their early days playing in Camden pubs in London right up to their now sell-out worldwide stadium gigs. The film is directed by Matt Whitecross, who was in college with Coldplay before they were ever Coldplay. So he goes back a long way with the members of the band. Incidentally, Matt Whitecross is also the guy who directed the Oasis Supersonic, fantastic movie, that documentary. Anyway, I was talking to Matt Whitecross the other day. I'm going to bring you some of that interview now, but first, let's just hear a clip from the actual documentary. And here is front person Chris Martin to start this off.
Music means everything to me. I think when I was about 16, I was performing and doing music at boarding school. And I remember saying to people, I'm going to do this forever. You know, they were like, sure, and why don't you reanimate dinosaurs while you're at it? You know, and it was that ridiculous. But I've been really blessed in my life with an ability to not give up. It came from my dad, that he's the first person that said it to me and would often say it to me. And I now say it to my son. My dad is a circus ringmaster, really, but he was told to be an accountant. And my mum, I could feel a certain frustration that she wasn't able to do what she really loved, which is music. So with both of them, there was a subconscious thing that if you really feel that you're supposed to do something, go for it. And it gave me this great sense of possibility. And then that philosophy became A Head Full of Dreams.
Now, Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams. It's the big documentary that's out at the moment. Big screen, small screen and all the rest of it too. Matt Whitecross made the movie. Matt, you're very welcome. First of all, congratulations. Where do we start? In fact, where do you start? You have more archive footage of Coldplay in your back pocket than anybody could possibly imagine. Were you literally there from day one?
I was lucky enough to be there before day one, really, because we all met within a few hours of arriving in London for university. And it wasn't for about another year that they really started thinking of putting a band together. So, we were all there from way before the beginning.
Yeah, because there's fascinating stuff from back in college and from the formation and handheld footage and university students and all the rest of it, etc. There was a thing from the early days where you see Chris Martin and you see him particularly with the kind of, you know, train tracks on his teeth and all that kind of thing and still making music. And then you see him later on. In one way, I don't think he's changed at all.
No, I think you're right. It's funny because obviously superficially he looks completely different. He lives in California. He's basically a rock god. But when you see him back then, so he couldn't look more different. He had this huge mop of hair and he was kind of gangly and awkward like all of us. But then actually in other ways, it's interesting how, you know, his personality, I think, the core personality is the same.
Because there's a funny thing that, like, I look at this since 99, then it comes to 2000 when they bring out the first thing, well, the first proper thing, like Yellow, etc. And you look back, it's like a band from about 30 years ago. With all X Factor and stuff that's happened in the last 18 years, it's great to see that a band just does what it does, rehearses in their rooms, tries to get a gig in some shitty little pub or whatever it happens to be, and just keeps moving up all the way, which is the way it was done years ago. Now, it was done years ago by throwing TVs out the window and by taking a lot of drugs. But, I mean, more or less, it's more or less the exact same. I thought those days were gone.
No, it's true. Well, I think they, I mean, sadly, probably they might be one of the last big bands to do it that way. I mean, you know, who knows? Things change all the time and things go in cycles. But it feels like, so we made another film about Oasis and it felt like they were one of the last bands to do it. Maybe Coldplay were the last band to go through that, you know, I guess the template that the Beatles set up all those years before.
Yeah, exactly. In one way, Chris Martin is kind of self-conscious a lot of the time. In front of the camera, little bits and pieces, no matter how sort of, I don't know, how much bravado that he has. But do you think he knew someday there'd be a documentary? At one stage, he's in that field somewhere and he says, in 4 years' time, we are going to be one of the biggest bands in the world and we'll be on national television even. And then you go to exactly, you cut to 4 years and 2 days or something and they're headlining Glastonbury. I mean, if there was something that he might have known, if there was a prescience about the guy, do you think in some ways that he just kind of, you know, never give up is the big thing. Don't give up is the big thing in the movie and he's always lived by that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing looking back because we didn't realise that was 4 years later, like even when we were looking at the footage recently. So I just said, well, you know, let's find out the date and just figure out what they were doing then. And it, weirdly, it turned out that it was almost to the day 4 years from that huge moment when Michael Leavis trusted them for the first time, which is a huge step for him and for them. I think they weren't, I think on paper you would say they weren't ready for that step up, and they kind of rose to the occasion. But it's hard to tell, isn't it, whether it's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, without that drive, without that self-belief, it can't happen. But yeah, there's something else. There's got to be kind of talent and luck and determination. There's all these things combined. But I, you know, when he said it, you can hear me laughing on camera because it seems so ludicrous.
Oh, that's you laughing, is it? Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But it's odd. It's just like, you know, as he says it, we all think he's joking and he's telling the truth.
Okay, you do sort of confront the whole thing about Coldplay being not very cool necessarily, and if you want to be cool, you got to have the Velvet Underground or Nick Cave, or you got to have, you know, whatever it happens to be, Radiohead or something. And the not coolness is something that they have kind of, if you like, confronted and accepted and made into something 10 times better than some bands who supposedly are cool. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We had a section in the film and the longer version where they explicitly talked about that, because Chris had talked about, now he's quite zen about everything. He's kind of got to a place in his life where he's like, look, people are going to love or hate this, that's fine. You know, we can't do anything. We just have to be the way we are. But I remember around the time of the fourth album, Viva La Vida, talking to him about it, and we had this section where he gets angry and he's like, look, we're not chasing being cool. That's not something, that's not our ambition. You can't knock us for not doing something that's not what we want to do, and it was all about the music. So I think there's other bands who can arrive fully formed and they spend a lot of time doing their hair in front of the mirror and they're all wearing leather jackets, and that's one thing, but it wasn't something that these guys were ever after. And when you see them earlier, it's so sweet. I mean, you see the early footage, like, we all look like a bunch of geeks, and there's something kind of lovely and innocent about it. You know, there's nothing affected, it's just that they are the way they were. It was all about the music. And the kind of the look came later.
Yeah, well, that's exactly one of the things. I mean, they're kind of like as though they're nerds and they know it. I mean, you go back to the Rock and Honkies, for God's sake. In fact, you have film of the Rock and Honkies on stage, the blues and the braces and everything else. I mean, like, when you were filming, like, that is your stuff, is it? Like, it's not somebody else's.
The Rock and Honky stuff isn't mine. No, that's one of the classmates, I think, shot that. I only met Chris and the rest of the band at uni.
But I mean, even as he says, the one says, yeah, girls wouldn't sit next to us at a bus stop and all that kind of thing. And like, he does, they know how to parody themselves and they kind of poke fun at their own, if you like, uncoolness or whatever. Like, they're clean cut hippie types, really, egalitarian flower child image, the middle class awkwardness and all the rest of it. I mean, it's all part of who they are. And I must say, I take my hat off to all. I think it's brilliant. Like, I've interviewed Coldplay twice, and the first time, I think it was he asked me more questions than I asked him. He suddenly got interested in something I said, and the whole interview was wasted in terms of finding out about Coldplay. And he was like, I was being interviewed, and he really is kind of, he's gauche, he's interested, he's up there. And he has this way of going on right through the whole movie. He smiles at everything, but he does get his own way through that smile, doesn't he?
For sure. No, definitely. Well, I think it's a mixture of kind of extreme drive and determination, but he's also a very sweet and loving and generous person. So I remember meeting him that first week in university and him. I couldn't really make him out. I couldn't tell if he was for real, because he had that thing. Again, he was much more interested in me than he was interested in talking about himself.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else was like, oh, I've just come back from doing this. I've just been traveling the world. I've been doing this. This is what I'm going to do. He wasn't interested in talking about himself. It was all about other people. And I remember, in terms of his generosity, it really hasn't changed. He was obsessed with the Reef. He spent the whole of that first term talking about this Reef gig that he'd got tickets for, and he managed to get everyone else to go along with him. And I couldn't get tickets. And he only found out that they were all heading out the door. And he was like, right, he was adamant that I had to take his tickets. And that was it. And he got angry about it. No, take my tickets. I want you to go. It's going to be a great gig. And he honestly hasn't really changed. He really is that kind of person. He's very open-hearted.
No, you can see that, all right. And also, like, the difference between this documentary and the last one. I mean, like, you made the brilliant Supersonic about Oasis. I mean, you couldn't get two different bands. I mean, first of all,
like,
there is a good mention of the New York Times thing, and he's lying on the stage at one stage just kind of saying, I hate the New York Times. Or, sorry, the New York Times hate us or whatever. And that is the case against Coldplay, of the suburban middle-class white men and the kind of karaoke, blissed-out music, etc., and all that sort of thing. But I mean, one of the things about Coldplay is it's never a question of affect the haters, it's embrace the fans.
Yeah, I think so. And you definitely get a sense of that. I mean, is it interesting, could we finish with a similar idea on Supersonic of Noel, you know, unexpectedly for me in some ways, when he was talking about the importance of Nebworth, and he said it had nothing to do with the band, it was just to do with the fans. And I think Coldplay have a similar thing, and it's interesting seeing the two bands, because obviously they've been friends at different points. So Chris is very close to Noel now, but they've all known each other. So there's a kind of like a friendly rivalry that goes on. But it's interesting because obviously, like you say, they're on the face of it, they're completely different. But on the other side of things, I think they both had that intense determination. Like Noel is a very hard taskmaster. He rehearsed the band for a year before anyone else heard a note. Chris is the same way. And I think the certain things, also, they're just very funny. Like I think, you know, Chris and Noel and Liam, in another land, in another kind of dimension, they could all be stand-up comics because they're hilarious, which is a side of them I think people forget.
Yeah, that's...
But there are certain kinds of similarities, and they definitely always bring it back to the fans. Liam never wants to talk about fans. They're not fans, they're just people. They're just, I don't call them fans.
That's why Liam did give the last one a certain edge, that it went right over the edge now and again. By the way, we are talking to Matt Whitecross, and Coldplay is the great documentary out at the moment, A Head Full of Dreams. Dave Fanning on 2FM. Now, if you've just joined us, we're going a bit big on Coldplay this morning. Well, you know, the new Coldplay documentary just released. It's called Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams. The double album too, live in Buenos Aires, live in Sao Paulo. And you can even get the DVD Thingamabob movie with that as well. Matt Whitecross is the guy who made it. He also directed the Oasis documentary Supersonic. We're called here A Head Full of Dreams, Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams. Anyway, I spoke to Matt Whitecross the other day, so let's have some more of that interview. Okay, let's take a blast of this. What do you call it? Noel Gallagher's in this for a very short time. You see him playing the guitar with one of the tracks they do. But the funny thing about it is, there's another connection between the two movies. Any idea exactly what it might be, Matt? No?
I'm
going to tell you.
Good question. Tell me.
Okay, me.
You're in both of them.
I'm in both of the movies, yeah.
Of course you are. You're right.
Yeah,
like, I've forgotten that. Sorry, it feels like a long time ago that we made both of them.
I know, but I went to the postman this morning, still no check in the post. It's just not good.
That's outrageous. I'll have to get on the phone to my producers as soon as I get off air.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, not only that, the credit at the end. Obviously, I waited to see what they were going to say as to why they used me in the movie. And the credit at the end, I was filling in for the morning programme of Jerry Ryan. It says, Jerry Ryan Show, RTE, July 2000. And it was it was just so prescient, saying, here's a brand new, I don't know what the quote was. Like, there's an awful lot of crap music out there at the moment, but here's something brand new that's really good. The band is called Coldplay.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
it was great. Well, we were trying to find something as we were putting together that Yellow sequence. I wanted to give a sense of like the film in some ways. I was reading this thing, and that because obviously they're an international band, that the Argentinian press were talking about it being a kind of a musical version of the film Boyhood.
Oh, yeah.
Linklater thing, which weirdly starts with the song Yellow as well. But anyway, you're seeing people change and mature over all that time. And we were trying to think, like, maybe this song Yellow should do the same thing as the whole film does, where you see them go through the ages and go through every bit. And the way that you summed it all up at the beginning, now it feels like a foregone conclusion. Of course, with that song, of course, with that band, they would have taken over the world. But you're the one who's like, oh, okay, things are pretty sketchy at the moment, but they can, you know, here's a ray of sunshine or whatever it is. And I love that sentiment of, like, you know, you really didn't feel at that moment that they were going to make it, and suddenly they did with just one song.
You see, there you are, like a key element to the whole movie.
Parents are not that great these days, but there is a beacon of light now and again. Yeah, myself is called Parachutes, the single is Yellow, and the band is Coldplay.
God, if it wasn't for me.
What would we do without you? I'm sorry, but we should have had your name up front before
Absolutely,
the credits.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly.
Next time.
I'd rather get something from the postman. Anyway, listen, where was I? Let's get back to this here now, because there are, like, I mean, this is a perfect band who've always got on very well. The most important thing about them is their friendship. Obviously, there's an awful lot of fights here and there, and disagreements and things and all the rest of it. But a couple of things did go wrong. The fifth member of Coldplay is Phil. Phil left at one stage. Now, Phil isn't a member of the band as such, but he was the guru or whatever, and he left at one stage. And when he left, and also when they got rid of, I think it was Will, didn't they get rid of Will at one stage as well?
Yeah.
Sure. That when they got rid of Will because somebody else was able to tell them that his drumming isn't good enough, and then they realised, what are we doing listening to this moron? Get Will back in, because, you know, it's the four parts. It's like getting rid of Ringo or something. The point about it is that they really are best together, and they make the best progress together as the best friends, four guys against the world, isn't that it?
I think so. I mean, it's interesting because I think, again, from the outside, as the gigs have got bigger and the entourage has got bigger and the crew has got bigger, you forget. And it's actually at the heart of it, just these four or five people. And I remember them talking about it and saying, you know, people expect from the outside that somehow maybe there's like market researchers working this out. We've got kind of 100 managers, but actually it's still done in a handmade way. And so what was nice for us is to get, you know, Chris talking when he was 20, about how, you know, people kind of get the wrong end of the stick and they think that it's manufactured and they're like a kind of, almost like a kind of indie boy band. And actually it's the opposite. And still now, to this day, is why we put a lot of that footage in of them discussing things. They just go, they sit down, the five of them in the room, and they figure it out for themselves, and then the machine takes over and sends it all over the world. But it's still the four or five of them at the beginning.
And do you think it's easy enough to be so cool that actually that, you know, manifests itself as being slightly negative in some ways? But like, you know, to quote, you know, Elvis Costello, what's so funny about peace, love and understanding? And that's really it. Hope, love and togetherness is the one he pushes all the time. And he means it, doesn't he?
Oh, God, he does. I mean, you know, the message at the end of the show and at the end of the film, I find really moving, particularly to see how they've changed and grown over the years. But it is, at the core of it, is still the beliefs that he had at the beginning. And I think it's funny because in at least in the UK, maybe not in Ireland, but certainly in England, we tend to be a little bit buttoned up emotionally, and we just like slightly cynical and distrustful of too much sentiment. And actually, you go to other countries, and then we put some of that footage in the film of India or Latin America or these places where people are just losing their minds from the first chord. There's something incredibly moving about people coming together and celebrating and embracing life rather than being cynical about it. You know, we live in quite tricky times politically for lots of reasons. And you can see the rise of the right and people trying to divide people, you know, divide populations. And actually, I think the message from the film and from Coldplay is the opposite. It's like there's much more that unites us than divides.
Yeah, we're talking about a new Coldplay documentary just released and the live double album as well. It's called Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams, directed by Matt Whitecross, who also directed the Oasis documentary Supersonic. And as I said earlier, I spoke to Matt Whitecross the other day, so let's get back, straight back, that is, into that interview. We'll just jump in here. And the various tours, the band playing in front of maybe 60 or 70 or 80,000 people at any one given time, I think, I don't know, I lost count, maybe up to 25, 30 different venues, literally in five continents.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. And it's like building and then deconstructing a city overnight, every night, for 2 years on and off. You know, the crew that they have are the best in the world, and they're absolutely unbelievable. When you see them working, because they arrive 2 days before the band, and they take 2 days to decompress, and I think they have two stages, so they're kind of bunny hopping each other. It's unbelievable. Like when you see, we used to have a big time-lapse sequence where you saw the thing being made, and then the gig happens, and the gig is over in the blink of an eye. When you're doing it on a time-lapse camera, that moment literally lasts for half a second, and the rest of it is just how you put this thing together. It's nuts, and they're taking it to places that have never had gigs like that before, like India, you know, and they're constantly trying to push the boundaries and spread, you know, to because they've got fans in lots of countries where you don't normally put on gigs like of this size. Well, so going to Manila, I think, was important for them. Bangkok
was
important.
Exactly, yeah. Well, there is something vaguely kind of controversial alluded to, but it's not much in it. Like, around the X and Y time, I think, Phil being the fifth member, I think it was around then when he left on that. And the manifestation afterwards was it came out in addiction and tension. What's the addiction exactly? I mean, like, there is one member of the band who talks about maybe I was drinking a bit too much.
Well, I think and they've talked a little bit about this in the past. We didn't dwell on it only just because of the amount of the screen time. Chris had talked a bit about he got addicted to sleeping pills for a bit because, again, they're just like one of those things. If he doesn't sleep well anyway, so when you're switching continent to continent every other night, I think it really messed with this. But, you know, people, I think that's one of those things where people say, you assume, well, that's fine because it's just sleeping pills, but they can be pretty hardcore. And then Guy had issues with drinking drugs, and then he's now very, very controlled, and he goes, like, as soon as he comes off stage, he goes back to the hotel and he doesn't do any of that kind of stuff. He doesn't even kind of hang around it. So, so that was their thing. But, you know, it's not unusual for bands. And that's why also it's not something they've talked about a lot in their music. It's not part of their kind of the thing that they promote. So I felt like we can touch on it. And similarly with the relationships and so on, it's like only when it really comes through the band and the music I wanted to have it included in the film.
Yeah, but there is a little bit like when they arrive at an airport at one stage and there's about 25,000 cameras on Chris Martin in particular because of breakup with Gwyneth Paltrow at the time, and you kind of allude to it, like, you know, like suddenly the other three guys say, wow, you know, our lives are so easy compared to this is getting too big and too crazy. You don't go too much further with that though, which I'm sure there is footage of it.
Well, not really. I mean, the thing is like, you know, because I've been privileged to be part of that whole family and been around, and they're so kind of open and so on. So it's not that so much. It's more that I think everyone knows the ins and outs of the tabloid side of things. But actually, I was just trying to figure out how it worked with the band dynamic. And actually, inevitably, like, the lead singer is always out in front. They're the one who gets the attention, particularly if they have high-profile relationships. But there's more that, you know, everyone knows about that side of things. I was thinking, like, what does it do to the band? Do they resent it? Do they deal with it? Do they actually come to accept it? Those kind of things were interesting to me. And then when it comes to Ghost Stories, which is the penultimate album they did, that was very clearly Chris talking about and dealing with musically with things that were going on,
yeah,
in his life.
Very personal.
So in,
yeah,
that sense, then we touch on it because it feels like it's appropriate.
One of the great things is, you know, at this stage of our career, because as he puts it, when a band gets massive and terrible at the same time, because it happens all the time, you've got to get somebody in, and the person you get in, like U2 did and all the rest of it, you know, you've got to get in Brian Eno or somebody like that. So let's get a Brian Eno type. No, let's get Brian Eno. So Brian Eno, yeah, comes in. Brian Eno, what did he do to the band? I mean, some of the stuff, like, first of all, the singing in churches in Barcelona and the chanting and all the rest of it. But above all, like, there's even one little sequence where there's a bunch of paper clips on a speaker.
Yeah,
like, okay.
He's mad, but in a such a beautiful, lovely way. Like, he's like a, I mean, I've only seen him through them. I don't know him personally, but whenever he's very, very approachable. But he's like a little child. He's like a super intelligent child where he's just, the world fascinates him, and every day he's coming in with something else he's just read or he's heard, or did you know this? And then he'll get them all to swap instruments. So, you know, say, right, Chris is on drums today. Johnny, who hates singing, he's going to be singing, all that sort of thing. And then they'll swap them all around and get them out of their comfort zone. But it's great because I think, like you said, that when you get to a certain size, the danger is you're suddenly surrounded by yes men, all worried about the next, you know, kind of the next spreadsheet. And actually having someone like Brian, who doesn't give a shit and just kind of comes in and says, right, this is what we're doing, this is how you do it, and bosses them about, I think it's very liberating.
Also, one thing that might be liberating for you as a filmmaker would be the fact that you have the three other guys talking all the time, but you never really see them much. You show footage of something happening, and you simply put their name, their first name, on the screen. Was that something you thought about beforehand? Because let's be blunt, and I'm going to be really cruel here for a second, for a lot of people who might see this movie, the other three are all one person.
No, sure. Well, I think that's the case with a lot of bands, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think about the big bands, probably even like Radiohead or Muse or any of these bands. I think, unless you're a fan, obviously you're a fan,
obviously,
you know them. But
yeah,
if you like the music a little bit and you hear it on the radio, then you won't know. I mean, yeah, I think the rest of the band, well, like Guy says, they can initially, maybe it got them on edge a bit, because, like, well, hang on, we're all in this band, we were kind of democracy, and now why is one guy getting all the attention? And then as it escalates further and further, you realise that's the best possible position to be in. You know, I remember Will talking about it, just saying, it's so great, we get to do all the fun stuff and all the flack and all the other, you know, all the bits and the attention, not being able to walk down the road, none of that applies to us. You know, they get recognized from time to time, but it's not a big thing. I remember my birthday a couple of years ago, some guy banging on the window in Camden because Will was there, and it was just like, he was just pointing because he's like, I got you, I know your face. You know, it's not the kind of thing where if Chris walks down the street, he'll stop traffic.
Yeah, of course. As he did in his bicycle, that was a bit of a brave move, wherever he was, somewhere, was it Japan or?
It was Manila, that's
Manila,
yeah.
Wherever, yeah. That's,
well, we were strictly told by security it was a really bad idea, but they were right.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Although, as Chris said,
like,
at the end
on,
of it all,
what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, that was a bit of fun, as he says. Listen, we're talking to Matt Whitecross. I'm going to leave it just with a couple of more questions, Matt, if that's okay. Excellent documentary,
sure.
Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams is what it's called. Fascinating stuff. And I think a lot of people who mightn't be Coldplay fans will be at the end of all of this. There's a lot of music in it too. There's not an awful lot about what any song might mean or be or do. You're not getting behind, like, what exactly does he mean by this? So was this one post 9/11 or?
No, it's interesting. We did talk about some of that, but again, getting too specifically into any one song felt like it was a kind of bit. There was so much to cover. You know, I think on when we did Supersonic on the last one about Oasis, we're only dealing with a very focused 2-year time period, so we did have a bit more space to kind of talk about things. And because arguably, you could, I mean, the creation of a song like Supersonic, for example, has a very specific moment. Whereas I think with the Coldplay songs, yeah, there are songs which are very personal and there are songs which mean certain things. But I think if we spent 10 minutes talking about that, we'd have had to skip a couple of albums. It was a tricky one in that sense.
Yeah,
what
indeed.
I really wanted to get into was just the process of how you can take something that doesn't exist and create it together as a team. So I think those moments where you see Chris writing songs and coming up with ideas and then gradually feeding it through this network of people, I love all that. As a non-musician, but as a fan, I find that fascinating.
Yeah, and even
and
the bands
seeing him play the first time before anyone, including the band, have even heard a note of it, playing the scientist to the camera. His camera in the studio. That sort of moment is kind of gold dust to me.
Well, there's a lot of moments like that in the movie, all right. I mean, like with bands who have to put an ad in a newspaper or in the NME or something like that. In fact, the funny thing, just to say something about the NME, it was like, it was so important that like the top 10 bands to look out for in 1999 onwards, and there they are in amongst, you know, Menswear and all these kind of things. And like, it was, it was the biggest deal of there. It was better than getting a record deal.
Exactly. That's the funny thing. You can't. It's almost impossible to try and communicate that to a young audience now, I guess. It's like, the NME, Steve Lamacq, that would change your life. Like, if you got on Steve Lamacq, that was basically you've made it. Yeah. And now it's like, I can't imagine it's the same thing. There's such a saturation of stuff being thrown at you.
It is not
second.
The same thing, I can tell you. It's completely different. Okay, just a few things. Like, I mean, you know, you two at the early 90s, Achtung Baby, that's when it all went wrong for them for the first few weeks. And they finally got a song or two together and then they were back. And like, I get the impression with Coldplay, they're better friends now than they ever even were, because they realise it's kind of the four of them against the world, and this is why it works. It's the four very different people. But the one thing is, the one that went wrong for them was X and Y around that time.
Right.
Now, I can't remember, there's a scene where they go backstage at one stage. First of all, Chris is giving out hell about hitting the microphone stand, hitting them, and this is the last feckin' time you're going to see bloody Coldplay and all this. And then the three of them are drinking water, and they're talking to that girl, whoever it is. They're probably going to go out for an encore. I can't remember what it is, but like, times were bad then, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were. And it was funny because I went to some of the gigs, but I wasn't really around the band at that point. So a lot of that footage is a guy called Matthew Miller, who still travels and is part of the band's team, and he's been documenting them for a long time. So a lot of the best footage is his. And he it was a strange fit with situation, I guess, because they were really not having a great time of it. You'd think, as everything's suddenly arriving and you've got, you know, the world is at your feet, you'd assume that's the best moment, but actually it turned out to be the worst, because I think they kind of imploded under pressure. And they had EMI, you know, the label of the Beatles and everyone else. Suddenly, the future of it was all hanging, supposedly, on every single note that they were playing.
It was not
a fun time to be around. And I think
paper headlines.
But I love that album. But I think they now, when they talk about it, they can't really see beyond the fact that it was so miserable. As you know, inside the band, so I think that's why, and I think there were particularly a lot of problems.
And one of the things you do is you see a song sort of forming in the studio, or just at a little piano, or in a toilet, or something, and then the next verse you see it in front of 80,000 people jumping up and down, and all the rest. But when you do that, you showed very little of the Super Bowl, about 2 seconds.
I know. Well, we wanted to put in more of the Super Bowl. We had a whole sequence of the Super Bowl because guys shot behind the scenes, and I think Chris had said, "Oh, it'd be lovely to have it because that meant a lot to us as a moment." It's just tricky, just something had to give. We had used to finish on the Super Bowl, but then I actually thought Super Bowl was one thing, but the gigs themselves are really what the band's about. So, and when I talk to Chris, I think the Super Bowl, by the sounds of things, meant more to Chris than it did to the rest of the band. I think the rest of the band would have been like, it was great, but actually what we love is playing to our fans directly.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, as I say, the band get on so well these days, and the last bit of just, there is one bit where the Leonardo conversation that Chris has about, you know, well, he sees patterns in the stars, so I thought that was Galileo. You know, like, you know, you don't like me using my lyrics, you know, you're a noun lover, you're a riff hater. It was actually very funny, but you know something? If Chris didn't have that laugh in his voice, it wasn't very funny.
No, it's definitely passive-aggressive on both sides, I think.
Exactly.
And it's quite a Spinal Tap. I mean, I love it. I'm glad that, you know, so that again was Miller shooting that stuff, and when I saw it, I was like, "Oh well, look, we'll put it in the film, and then I guess at some point we might have an argument about, but it's not a side of us that we really want people to see." But they were so great about it; they just let us get on with it. But I think it's very revealing as well. They kind of got through that dark patch.
Indeed. Well, listen, Matt, thank you so much for talking to us, and congratulations on the movie. The second one, I mean, I think after, like, I mean, you and me together, like, we're such a team.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Okay, well, listen, Matt, thank you so much for talking to us. Coldplay, A Head Full of Dreams is the name of the movie, out now, a must-see, even for people who aren't sure if they like Coldplay. It's great. Dave Fanning on 2FM.